Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. We're going to start our hour with David Folkenflik, media correspondent for NPR News, who was at the President-elect Donald Trump press conference that took place yesterday. We're going to ask him about, because it's created quite a stir among journalists, some who have said it's a good thing to publish this dossier information, others saying that it is not. Intelligence reportedly gathered from a former British intelligence agent as opposition research from both the Republicans and the Democrats about alleged ties between Donald Trump and Russia claimed that Russian authorities have been cultivating and supporting Donald Trump for at least 5 years and that there is compromising material. Key figures in Congress have seen the material. It's been publicly alluded to. John McCain had passed the material, and that's a story in itself, how he got the material, passed it to FBI Director James Comey last month. Nobody published its entire stunning contents until a couple days ago, and nothing in these memos has been confirmed. Top U.S. intelligence officials, as you know, saw fit to brief Donald Trump on the dossier, and it would seem to indicate that they took the claims at least somewhat seriously. Whether BuzzFeed was right or wrong to publish the memo, how it could come back if it's entirely false, press, whether it should have been presented with more critical commentary or context, the question will be debated for some time, already is, and I would imagine there are many news organizations now. We'll find out from David who's on the story and who's trying to verify all that's in the explosive dossier. We'll be welcoming phone calls for him. He's with us the first part of the hour. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And Twitter is at K Dunn Show. And David, we thank you so much for being with us. Hi, David. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Great pleasure. Well, let's talk about the publication of this dossier by BuzzFeed. Is it problematic for journalists? Was it a good thing to have been done? Is it, considering the state of fake news and where we're getting information now, something that had to be published? What do you think?
Well, I think it's reflective, among other things, of what an incredibly bifurcated and differentiated media landscape we're in at the moment. That is, the right decision may be different for one publication than another, and may be different from one editor to another. Among the people I canvassed yesterday to talk to them about their thoughts about this were two past publishers. In fact, the two most recently, past executive editors of the New York Times. One was Bill Keller. The other was Jill Abramson. Bill Keller said, you know what, the freedom to publish is also the freedom not to publish. He said, I think by posting something publicly in the way that BuzzFeed did, it bestows some credibility about the information that is conveyed and contained in there, even if you say, as BuzzFeed carefully did, a lot of this stuff is unsubstantiated. On the other hand, Jill Abramson said, look, this stuff has been circulating to journalists for months. The fact that it hasn't been posted until now is pretty extraordinary. It has shown restraint. It has served as the core of a briefing that the chief heads of the intelligence agencies gave to both President Obama and President-elect Trump, and the very fact of that renders this material vital for the public to know and to evaluate when properly contextualized. Far better that BuzzFeed's journalists do that in a careful way than some outfit like WikiLeaks does that in a completely careless way. And so you're seeing a lot of real divisions and a lot of arguments about this. One of the interesting fallouts on this was that Trump used this at the press conference yesterday against CNN and, by extension, much of the mainstream media. What CNN did was simply report that this report existed, that it was deemed to come from a credible source, although the specific information was unsubstantiated, and that it was taken in such grave concern that either that Mr. Trump might well have been compromised in such a way that the Russian authorities thought they could effectively blackmail or pressure him, as was alleged, because of alleged salacious sexual behavior, or separately, that his associates may have been in contact with Russian government figures, possibly Russian spy figures, in a way that might break federal law to a very grave degree in terms of electioneering for the past campaign. And so that it induced those guys to take it seriously enough to take it to Obama and to take it to Trump. CNN reported that but didn't report publicly what these specific allegations were because it said it could not verify them. BuzzFeed said, well, now that that's been done, we're going to share the document because, A, we think that we shouldn't be holding things back from the public just because we're somehow wiser than the public is, and, B, maybe this will induce new knowledge to come forward to help either disprove or confirm some of the allegations. So, you know, this has been a real firestorm. Trump used that to blame CNN, to call them fake news, to say that they were not behaving responsibly, and to use that to sort of tar the rest of the press as well.
And what did he say about the dossier, Donald Trump, yesterday? Did he talk about it? I know he was asked questions about it. Did he answer those?
You know, Trump just said never happened. He called him. He said, look, I'm a germaphobe, as a way of disdaining the idea that he would get involved with sexual activity with others. And again, NPR is not getting into specifics on that until we can confirm or deny what the accusations are. In addition, he just said Sean Spicer, the incoming White House press secretary for Trump, named three individuals who have worked over the course of the past year for the Trump campaign or been in some ways affiliated with it. Michael Cohen, a lawyer, Carter Page was cited by Trump as an advisor last spring, and Paul Manafort was for a while a campaign manager. He denied vehemently that any of the three had anything to do with this, but it does seem as though, you know, the broader question of whether there was some contact has not been fully addressed in anything but the most glancing and general denials.
So tell me, who's on the story? How is this going to be a very difficult story to investigate what the truth is here? What are the problems to getting to the truth? And who's on the story? I would imagine a lot of people are.
Right. Well, it's a little bit like a John le Carré story.
Yes, it is.
Bugs Bunny or something.
Right.
You know, there's elements of farce and elements of just intrigue and shadows that envelop a lot of this stuff. The reason that intelligence officials took this seriously, according to what we've learned from, you know, reporting in the Wall Street Journal and elsewhere, is that it came from, as you mentioned in your introduction, a former British intelligence official with whom American intelligence agencies have long had close ties and have respected and trusted the work because it's been borne out in the past. Now, he did this research on behest of Trump's political opponents, both the Republican rivals in the primaries and also more recently people affiliated with Hillary Clinton in the general. But they didn't publish this publicly. I think that they this was shared with reporters. If you think of David Corn, who I think is a terrific journalist, but definitely coming from a left-of-center point of view for the left-of-center magazine Mother Jones, he talked a bit about this stuff several months or at least weeks before the election, but was careful himself not to publish these specific allegations because he said he couldn't verify them. You know, Trump denounced all this as fake news. I think what CNN published was, although there's been some argument over a detail here or there, basically reported, you know, what it could gain as the facts. And what BuzzFeed did wasn't report fake news. It said this is the document contained, you know, that served as the basis of the briefing, but didn't vouch for it. Those are different standards of publication. I'm not sure I'm fully comfortable with them, but I understand it. I think there is an argument to be made for it. None of it is fake news. It's not intended to be a hoax. Not intended to mislead people. It's not intended to warp their understanding of public events. What Trump is doing is essentially categorizing any news that is inconvenient or undesirable as fake news and draining that term of its currency as something that really is characterizing hoax in the public sphere. I think that he's also choosing to make the story about the media's behavior and not about questions about his own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are serious questions that are enveloping his campaign. Even just within the last hour, we've heard that the Justice Department's Inspector General is investigating how the FBI dealt with allegations involving Hillary Clinton. Well, here's questions of how, you know, allegations against Donald Trump have been handled, very gingerly, it seems, at least by intelligence until now. And if you think about fake news, you know, as Josh Earnest, the White House press secretary for President Obama, pointed out yesterday, the number one trafficker in some ways in the public sphere in fake news until recently was Donald Trump,
mm-hmm.
who without any evidence to support it or any reason to say so, for years propounded the wrong-headed idea that President Obama was not born in this country.
Right. Because of the players involved here, you've got this MI6 former intelligence agent out of out of Britain, who, from what I've been reading, has gone underground. He's worried, understandably, about his life. The Russians have been known to be not be very nice to people who may expose some of their wrongdoing. So it's going to be hard to contact him to get his story on this. Then you've got videos, perhaps, that the Russians have, but evidently nobody else has at this point. This is a really tough story to get to the bottom of, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's particularly difficult in terms of once the president-elect becomes the president, you don't have the FBI and the NSA and the CIA very likely to be investigating him at that time. It becomes very difficult, which is not to say that professionals in the FBI and the Justice Department won't go where the evidence takes them if they need to, but that, you know, investigations tend not to proceed along those lines. So it's hard to know, in part because it's spycraft.
Yes.
Or because it's very shadowy, in part because, you know, the Russians are not necessarily reliable narrators in this stuff, and in part because very few governments are going to be fully candid in this. So it's, you know, one thing that we know from reporting in recent months, and this is true on the media side, it's true on national security side, is that there are these ties and these entanglements and involvements that Trump has, seemingly both in terms of his business enterprises, but also in terms of his political beliefs, or at least those that he's espoused of late, that have drawn him close to the circles of Putin and Putin's advisors in ways that have deeply discomfited serious figures on both sides of the political aisle in Washington and in the national security establishment. Now, maybe those guys are wrong. And certainly, as Trump's people have pointed out, you know, governments in both parties have cozied up to really problematic and autocratic regimes
right.
all over the world. So they can say, well, this is one maybe we can work with. But if it is true that the Russians worked in concert in any way with the Trump campaign, and I'm not saying that that's shown to be the case at all, that would be a deeply problematic thing. I mean, there could be real legal implications for that. So for Trump simply to say that reporting that the intelligence officials took that seriously enough to brief the president and the president-elect on that is somehow fake news is essentially him to use jujitsu against the press and to change the subject from the troubling issues that have been raised.
We'll take a couple phone calls for you. David Folkenflik is our guest, media correspondent for NPR News. He was at the Donald Trump press conference yesterday, and we're talking about this story, the dossier, the 35 pages published by BuzzFeed, creating quite a buzz in among people in the Trump campaign and among some journalists as to whether or not allegations that have not been proven should have been published. We're talking about Donald Trump's response to this, fake news, etc. Our number is 800-486-8655. Jake in Oshkosh, hi.
Hi, good afternoon, Catherine. I wanted to compliment you, first of all, on the selection of the guest. This is the best summary I've seen or heard on this event since it began 24 hours ago. So my compliments to you on that. My question to the guest is, you had mentioned that this story has been in circulation for a very long time. Well, how long has this story been in circulation amongst the journalistic community?
So first off, may I just thank you for very kind remarks. My understanding is that this has been circulating, not broadly, but certainly initially for some months, because the investigator and in my understanding, the former reporter turned private investigator who contracted with the British intelligence official decided that this was just a problem from even once their contract concluded. So this initially was circulated, I think, before the election, which is probably how David Korn of Mother Jones and some others had it. Julia Yaffe, who's a reporter with The Atlantic, who has great expertise in Russian issues, sort of said online that she had it, and at one point said something cryptic that I think only those who had seen it would have understood, saying, you know, hey, all those who have seen this incredible dossier, you know, raise your hands or something. Now, the rest of us didn't know what the heck to make of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there were, you know, couple dozen folks in Washington who had it and were trying to run it down and who decided not to report on it because they could not verify it, showing you in some ways people could say, oh, well, this is a way in which journalists bend to power. Or you could argue these are journalists showing discretion. People think that we publish things recklessly without caring. Actually, journalists try to track things down most of the time and try to handle it. What happened with BuzzFeed is once CNN essentially tore a hole in the curtain and said, this is the basis of actions by our most senior intelligence officials in the country, in our country, it provided the opportunity for BuzzFeed to say, we don't have to hold back. We don't think the public should be ignorant of what so many journalists now are aware of. And that is the tension. Are we withholding information from intelligent people, voters, in a way that they would say, well, why are you somehow preventing information from getting to us? Aren't we smart enough to be able to think this through for ourselves? Or conversely, if you do publish it, are you somehow inflicting this on the public that isn't paid full-time to investigate or to examine or analyze these very issues? And if you think about how hard this is for journalists who are paid to do this full-time to figure out, how much harder it is for somebody else who's got to pick up the kids at soccer practice
Absolutely.
Or do the dishes. You know, what are they expected to make of this?
What congressional bodies will investigate this? Is the FBI conducting an investigation, David?
You know, I don't know the full state of play of this. I know that the intelligence committees have presented this to the president and the president-elect. And, you know, I think there's widespread belief that the executive body, that is, that the justice and the FBI will essentially stop looking at this the moment Trump becomes president, because it's very hard for the Justice Department to investigate the president himself. Usually that implicates a special prosecutor, as we saw during the Clinton years when his personal behavior was questioned and whether or not he had, you know, lied under oath and these other issues in a civil suit that had nothing to do with his functioning as president, but had everything to do with how well he would function as president. You know, Congress has the ability to do this. The new Congress, you know, with strong majorities in both sides, or at least strong majorities in the House and a good-sized majority in the Senate, is reluctant to start by its venture under a new Republican president for the first time in 8 years by investigating the guy and possibly turning up things that could embarrass, damage Donald Trump or take him down. So I think that you're not going to see really aerobic Republican investigations unless the public turns against Trump. And that said, you know, certainly you've seen Senator McCain and Lindsey Graham and others successfully push for what will be apparently Senate hearings on the Republican hacks of the Democratic National Committee during the campaign season itself. So that could damage or be a prove embarrassing to Trump and his campaign and people who are helping him in his new White House, but that's unlikely immediately to lead to questions about what he himself or his inner circle did during the campaign.
Mm. So the press has a difficult job. It could be up to the press to make sure story is flushed out.
I think you are going to see time and again, this is a huge example. I mean, my goodness, the headlines that this creates, the sensation that this has stirred, the controversy in the press as well as about the press. But I think that you are going to see time and again in these opening months with such an unusual president, with such unprecedented questions about his business enterprise, I think not allayed, not put to rest by what he announced yesterday, questions about his behavior during the campaign and about how he approaches the job. I think the press is going to be more of a constitutional part of the check and balances than it's been in quite some time. Mm.
Can you give us 4 more minutes? I know you're busy.
Let's do it. Sure.
All right, good, good. Let's go to Teresa in Neenah. Hi, Teresa.
Hi. Hey, I was just thinking about his tax returns. Trump said that he would release his tax returns, and he has not done so. And I feel like the press is giving him a pass on this. And I think it would shed some light on, you know, this whole business with Russia. We don't really know the extent to which he's dealt with people in Russia. And I think if he were pressed more by journalists to, number one, you know, stick to what he said he was going to do, and number two, release his tax returns, I think it would shed a lot of light on this.
David.
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting that you raise that. I mean, I think that the press conference yesterday was initially announced. It was going to be in December to announce all of his business things, and then it was put off till January, and then it was a general news conference, and then it became primarily about this issue, about this dossier involving his relationship with the Russians. You know, the tax things, he has said consistently he'll do it when his audit is over, and he can't do it during his audit. Now, everybody who's ever held significant office in Washington at the IRS tells you being audited in no way prevents you from releasing that audit. It just may be embarrassed, or releasing your tax things. It just may be embarrassing in terms of what's in there. After all, if you're under an audit, there's clearly something being scrutinized. It is entirely possible that Donald Trump doesn't have any debt to the Russians, and he's telling the truth. I talked to a couple of folks yesterday who have tracked him closely in his business dealings over the years, and they say they think a debt may be a significant less problem than liquidity. That is, that he doesn't have cash. He's got things tied up in holdings that he can't really get to, and so that may make that's what at times imperils his financial stability for his holdings in the past. But, you know, one of the very last questions, if I'm remembering the order correctly, in yesterday's press conference came from Hallie Jackson of NBC News, who asked him about taxes. And he said, you know, I can't do it because I'm under audit. And she said, well, actually, of course you can. Everyone can. And he made fun of her. He said, oh, you know, like I've never heard that before. And he really went back at her and kind of talked over her. And that's fine. That's how he chooses to address it. And she said, well, this is really what we need to know to have confidence in our understanding of your business holdings and the implications of them, just as you've just said now. And his response was, only you care. Only the press care. Right. Only reporters care. He said, the public doesn't care. After all, I won. Now, Donald Trump likes to point to ratings, likes to point to polls when they're in his favor, likes to point to his win. Not necessarily a popular vote, but he certainly won, and he won, you know, by the Electoral College rules. And he points to that result as validation of the decisions he made along the way to say, it doesn't matter if I live up to a promise or not. Only you people in the press care. Well, at times, the press isn't going to prevail. And it may not prevail simply by asking politely. It may prevail by finding ways to get information from lawsuits, from disclosure forms, from federal filings, wherever they may be, from secret sources. To help flesh out what's being known. And I think the press is going to have to be aerobic. And by the way, Donald Trump may have a perfectly successful administration going forward. But I think the press, you know, he has shown no inclination towards transparency or being held accountable. And a lot of the moves he's taken to allay those concerns fall far short of actually addressing them as most people, even of both parties, constitute their understanding of that. So I think that the press is going to have to be aerobic, and simply being turned down doesn't mean you stop persisting, both in terms of asking for the information, but also in terms of finding alternate routes to obtaining it.
Well, you also have to be able to ask the questions. The encounter with Acosta from CNN was a bit problematic, that there was quite a scene that took place there, and he wouldn't take a question from him. I mean, you could reach a point where he's just not going to take questions from the press, which is a difficult thing for us, right?
And he hasn't taken questions since this summer. You know, he did more press conferences, or particularly more interviews, than I think I've ever seen in a modern candidate. And as soon as he wrapped up the convention, and as soon as he didn't like the tenor of some of the coverage, he was gone. He was done. And he made that pretty explicitly clear in yesterday's press conference. He said, you know, he came back, and for those who listened, or watched, you heard applause, which is really weird.
Yes, it was strange.
And it wasn't from those of us in the press. It was from the members of the Trump Organization and his business enterprises. And when I say members, I mean paid staffers, employees, who were lining these marbled walls in the central atrium of Trump Tower here in Midtown Manhattan, just a block or two away from the southeast corner of Central Park, and it's an extraordinary sort of essentially little luxury mall in there, and they're lining those walls and applauding him and laughing at his jokes and at times jeering at reporters when he makes fun of them. And he started by saying, you know, it's good to be back. I've missed this. I've had a great time doing these press conferences. You know, I probably won the nomination in part because of how many press conferences I had, but I stopped doing them when you guys, you know, started being unfair, or when I didn't like, you know, your coverage. And he basically was laying down a marker to say, hey, I'm here. I enjoy doing this, but it's up to you guys. I'm not going to do it if you don't treat me in a way that I perceive to be fair. And by fair, as with a lot of human beings, but as a fair, he means kindly.
Mm-hmm.
He means whether he perceives it to be a largely positive coverage. And that's essentially his definition. So, you know, a fairly tough marker being set down. He's saying, I'm willing to be available as long as you're willing to be not particularly confrontational, not particularly challenging. You know, Jim Acosta was challenging in part because Acosta, a reporter for CNN, Trump went after CNN so hard. And he went after CNN in a way that really attempted to pigeonhole it as fake and as ideological in a way that I think was unfair to the nature of the reporting that CNN presented.
Teresa, thank you. One more call. Rod in Weyerhaeuser. Hi.
Yes, another good program, Kathy. Thank you. Hey, I was just going to say, you know, I never knew Donald Trump much about him until he started running. But I can see, you know, a few years back, you know, they were talking about personalities, and they were saying there's an A and a B and a C or whatever. You know, the A is the, you know, leader, and you, there ain't such a word as can't. Well, that's, I believe, what Donald Trump is. The only thing is, I think he's overdoing it, and of course there's nobody with really any spine to come back at him. I would believe that Harry Truman probably would have just motioned to him during the campaign to let's go out back, and they would have solved it right there. Trump would have probably came back with missing the teeth, missing his front teeth, but and that's probably the best way to do it. But also I was going to say that the CNN or Donaldson, Sam Donaldson used to be on ABC. I think Sam Donaldson, that's who we need, because I don't know if he's alive anymore, but he used to have a way of getting all this information out of these people one way or the other. I know people didn't like him, but he did it.
You know, I think the caller raises an excellent point, and, you know, I think it's telling in a few ways. We didn't know a lot about Donald Trump as a public figure as opposed to a real estate seeming mogul, personality, you know, one of these kind of business moguls who pitches himself as being able to help others in their aspirations, as opposed to, you know, an incredible titan of industry, which Trump, although a billionaire, is not, although, you know, he's got a huge business enterprise nonetheless. I think that he does see being an alpha dog, being a type A personality, as important. He talks about that, the need to dominate in certain kinds of negotiations, mind games he likes to play. And in addition, he sees strength in attacking the press. It certainly is red meat for his core, a lot of his core voting blocks. And there are people who, for good reason and for poor reasons, don't necessarily have the same trust and respect they had for the press that they might once have done. That said, you know, in some ways it belies an incredibly thin skin, an incredible sense hypersensitivity that you wouldn't think of as a macho attribute. But it's the quick twitch taking of offense, which is a staple in some ways of ideological cable news and of reality shows, I think heavily influences what we see from Trump and his aides, particularly as evidenced last yesterday's press conference, where Sean Spicer, as the press secretary, came out and instantly laid into the press. He then introduced Vice President-elect Mike Pence, who instantly went after the press and said, you know, we have great freedoms, but with freedom comes responsibility. Now, in my personal life, I think that's absolutely true as citizens, and I think that's true of the press as well. But I don't know that some of the most powerful officials in the country condemning using the bully pulpit against the press time and again when stories are inconvenient, uncomfortable, critical of them, you know, they have a lot of power. And it is as tempting to set a tone for the press to try to essentially say, don't stray or we're going to snap you back into line. That's not really how the checks and balances in our country were envisioned. Mm.
David, final question. Where should we go as consumers of news to find out the best reporting on this dossier?
I think, you know, one of the things about the modern age is that we have to read and consume news broadly, and we have to do more vigorously than before. No one news organization, even though a lot of news organizations are doing more than ever in some ways, they can't do it all. And the good news is, you know, through certain kinds of aggregators or news portals like Yahoo or Google or the like, you can get a lot of information. But I'd read stuff that is non-ideological. I'd read major newspapers such as, for example, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, the New York Times, I think, in terms of this kind of stuff. I'd read some foreign ones as well, Times of London and The Guardian. I'd look at major news organizations, and I'd look at some ideological ones. I think Mother Jones has done some very good stuff. Sometimes you find good work in the National Review. You know, there are different places that do either smart takes or smart analyses or smart original reporting. And I think we have to really scrutinize and test some of the sources that we look at and check it against other things. And that's asking more of us as citizens than it has in a long time to try to differentiate
this
stuff. But I think that's sort of where we're at in this age.
Yeah. David, thank you so much for being with us and
you
for
bet.
Your fine reporting. David Folkenflik, media correspondent for NPR News. He spent more than a decade at the Baltimore Sun, and his stories are on All Things Considered, Morning Edition. He's the author of Murdoch's World, The Last of the Old Media Empires. This is the Ideas Network.